You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Earlier in the week, I spoke with U of I ag economist Daryl Good about the marketplace. We started by going through last Friday's grain stocks and prospective plantings reports and the numbers that Daryl thought were important.
Yeah, I think in the case of corn, March 1 inventories at just right at 6 billion bushels of corn was about 150 million smaller than what the market was looking for and implied a pretty healthy rate of feed and residual use of corn during the second quarter. That follows an implied slow rate of feeding in the first quarter of the marketing year. So we kind of continue this saga of kind of very erratic quarterly disappearance of corn in that category. But the smaller than expected stocks really caught the market's attention, obviously, and now we're looking forward to the WASDE report next week to see how the USDA changes their projection of year-ending stocks and whether that gets tighter than what they were projecting last month. I think you can make a case that they might raise the feed use 100 million bushels or so. Exports have been a little slow. They might make some adjustments there. So that's going to be a critical number next week. The prospective plantings report pushing 96 million acres was probably about a million acres more than the market was looking for. Points to potentially a very large corn harvest in 2012. So we continue this very inverted price pattern, very high old crop corn prices, but pretty ordinary now new crop prices in the low $5 range versus $6.50 for old crop, just on the anticipation that this tight stock situation will go away next year. So new crop prices rebounded a bit with the report, but that rebound was really very muted compared to the rebound in old crop prices. So I guess in summary, you're saying continuation of very tight stocks, anticipation of a very large crop. So you've got that dichotomy going on in the corn market. In the case of soybeans, March 1 inventories at 1.37 billion bushels, about what the market expected. That's an easier number to anticipate. There should not be big surprises there. Prospective plantings a bit smaller than the market was looking for, looking to be unchanged perhaps at 75 million acres. And then we came in just under 74 million. So again, with the anticipation that upcoming estimates of the South American crop will get smaller, this smaller soybean acreage number, I guess, keeps the market on edge that we might see the reverse happening in soybeans, moving this year from a kind of a comfortable carryover situation to potentially a tighter situation next year. So we saw a rebound both in old crop and new crop prices. Now we move forward. I think folks will be anxious now to see the June acreage report. After the March survey was done, we did see a lot of strength in soybeans and weakness in corn prices. And so there's some question of whether farmers' actual plantings will differ from the intentions reported in the March survey.
What does history tell us in years like this one where we were short in the corn crop but appear to be coming back with a large planted acreage, which would be pretty typical when you have a short crop and a high price, corn would go in the ground. What does it tell us about how the marketing function works in May, June, July, August, and then what happens in new crop once we really get into the harvest season?
Well, I think the driving force will continue to be making sure we end up with some inventory of old crop corn. So the job of the market right now for corn, as it has been historically in tight stock situation, is to ration the remaining stocks of corn until the new harvest is available. And what kind of price that takes is going to be a function of what's revealed in terms of how fast we're using those remaining stocks. We'll look at weekly ethanol production, weekly exports, and gauge whether we're using too fast or too slow and whether prices have to go up or down to adjust that rate of consumption. What we won't know until we get the June stocks report is what does feed and residual use of corn look like. And so I think what we're going to see is that old crop corn prices are going to remain fairly high and obviously remain at a substantial premium to new crop prices until the market is convinced that we've done an adequate job of rationing those available supplies. Then as you get into later in the summer, obviously if the market's convinced that rationing is done, new crop is in good condition, then I would say that inversion, the premium of old crop to new crop, will begin to dissipate a little bit, and then clearly as you get into harvest, it becomes one price.
It becomes one price. Is the new crop held up very much by a spiked or a very high old crop price?
Clearly it is. I mean, there's those are not going to get extremely differentiated, I don't think. I mean, we've got a fairly substantial inversion now, almost $1.50 a bushel. That's pretty big. But there's also new crop prices will continue to be supported somewhat by just the uncertainty about how big the crop is actually going to be. We think we have the acreage or will get the acreage planted. Might be slightly different than intentions, but still a lot of unknowns about growing conditions this year and what kind of yield we will have. If we have another subpar yield year, then the acreage will not be adequate enough to really see a substantial rebuild of inventory. So the new crop price has to, I think, reflect that risk or uncertainty about how big the crop is. If we get into July and August and things are going well, I think there would be room for new crop prices to come down even more from where they are now.
Fundamentally, have you gone through and figured end ending stocks number for 2012-13 based on USDA's national average, based on a national average that you're comfortable with as well? Both of those are two different things. And what's kind of the range that we're looking at?
Well, I haven't done the specifics yet. I would like to see where USDA comes out on their feed and residual use for the current year and use that to project into next year. And just as background in making those projections, recognize that there's not only considerable uncertainty about crop size, there's clearly a lot of uncertainty about how much corn we're going to consume next year. A lot of dynamics in all the markets, exports, feed, and ethanol use of corn. But you could see with this acreage number and with an above-trend yield and no substantial increase in consumption, I mean, we could see stocks balloon to, 1.8 billion bushels next year. If we do see a rebound in exports, yields at trend or slightly below, then you're going to be looking at ending stocks at maybe 1.2 to 1.3. So right now, neither of those suggest extreme tightness, but a range of 500 to 600 million bushels, I think, is realistic at this point.
Our current new crop prices, which are based on, I think, about a 1.6, maybe a 1.7, 7.5, as big as that on an ending stocks, they seem to be, the price seems awfully high compared to what that ending stocks number is showing us at this point.
Yeah. And again, the ending stocks number is USDA's projection. And I mean, it is a projection in the sense that we have analysts looking at the numbers and saying, this is how we see things shaping up. It is not, the production number is not survey-based at all, won't be until August. We don't know for sure the planted acres number. So it reflects a lot of opinion, I guess, is the point to make. And different analysts are going to have different opinions about what are the correct numbers to put in the balance sheet. So, yes, the USDA has thrown out a kind of a benchmark of a 1.6 billion bushel carryover, but I don't think anybody would defend that number to a large degree because, realistically, there's too many unknowns. So the market has to price in some of that uncertainty, both on the production side and the demand side of the equation. And as more information becomes available in one direction or the other, prices will follow that. So if we plant 96 million acres, we harvest, 89 million acres, we have 162 bushel average yield, and we don't see any expansion in consumption, prices will go lower than what we're looking at right now.
And this is what USDA suggested long before the prospective plantings report came out in March during its Ag Forum, that we would have maybe a 1.6 billion bushel carry out in 2012-13, or at the end of the current growing season, usage that is, and that in that same breath they made a suggestion about price. I think it was 520, if I remember correctly, but that was based on many early season sales as opposed to sales much later in the season, and they thought that the price would be much lower by the time we get around to the summer of 2013.
Yeah, I mean, projecting prices out to the summer of 2013, I mean, that's an impossible task, because now you have to factor in what's the next year's growing season going to be. So, I mean, if you just plug in trend yields, you can make some kind of price assessment, but those reliability of those kind of projections is very low.
It's very difficult. What do you suggest for producers at this point? And I suppose you start at the idea that, yes, they took crop insurance, and that it, at a minimum, it's what they've done in the past, maybe 85 or 90 rather than 80, and that they actually used, I can't imagine they didn't, the trend-adjusted yield. So what are your suggestions?
Well, I think on old crop corn, recognize that May futures are now moving back up against the upper end of the trading range that we've seen since last fall, and pushing up against the recent high we saw. So I think there's some opportunities to go ahead and move some old crop corn here. Do you retain some old crop inventories just in case, perhaps? But I think the kind of rebound we've had the past week offers us an opportunity to make some additional old crop sales, and particularly for those that have still have a relatively large percentage of the old crop left, I think this is a real good opportunity to make some catch-up sales. New crop, obviously, is a much more difficult decision. Prices are well below the insurance price now, which says we might want to move a little cautiously on new crop sales. Also, we've got a lot of growing season left, and so I would be moving much more slowly on new crop corn sales, particularly if I'd already made some at higher prices. I wouldn't be in a hurry on new crop corn right now.
Advice for soybeans?
Soybeans were you know, $14 soybeans. I had a really nice rally. It is I'm always a fan of just making incremental sales. $14 is not a bad place to make some sales, old crop and new crop.
Probably not a bad place to make sales, $14 soybeans. If you had the opportunity at this point to still make decisions about in the state of Illinois, and you might divide it between the upper two-thirds and the lower two-thirds, or in the lower third, between planting corn or planting soybeans, what would you do?
Well, in my opinion, unless you're going to make some substantial pricing decisions associated with those planting decisions, I'm not sure you can make a case for altering your planting plans very much. I think those that are in a decision framework are those that are looking at corn on corn and are a bit concerned about the yield risk of corn on corn. The recent price shift with higher soybean prices might be an opportunity to say, okay, I'm not going to take as much yield risk on corn and maybe move a bit of more of that back to soybeans. So I think at the margin, that's the only place I would really second guess my planting decision.
Let's go through fundamentals of consumption for the coming marketing year by category. Export market?
Export market, we're coming off of a year of pretty low exports and a very large North American harvest last fall. Now we're looking at a smaller South American harvest this spring. And if you assume a more normal North American grain harvest next fall, you would say there would be opportunity for U.S. corn exports to rebound from maybe the 1.7 this year, to add 100 to 150 million bushels to that next year, would put us back in a more typical range of exports. On feed use, again, I know USDA is plugging in a very large increase in feed use. I'm skeptical of that at this point. We're not likely to see an expansion in livestock numbers very rapidly. So I would be a little cautious about. I think feed use this year will be higher than the 4.6 currently projected, and maybe 4.7, and you might add another 100 million bushels to that next year. The real difficult one is ethanol, because that's so many moving parts to ethanol right now. We could spend a lot of time just talking about the dynamics of the ethanol market. On the surface, it appears that ethanol production will be kind of plateauing, flattening out here over the next couple of years. But a lot depends on how rapidly we actually move to an E15 blend. And that would expand the blend wall to some extent if we can move to E15. And the economics of using ethanol are still quite strong, with ethanol cheap relative to gasoline. But the other piece of that is the export market for ethanol. We're facing an advanced biofuels mandate here in 2012 that will increase in 2013. U.S. corn-based ethanol does not qualify for that advanced, but Brazilian ethanol does. And there's some thinking that we might see ourselves in a position of importing a lot of Brazilian ethanol to meet that advanced biofuels mandate, and in return we export a lot of corn-based ethanol so that to restock their domestic supply. And so that says that while the general picture is ethanol use kind of flattening out, corn consumption flattening out, you can write a scenario where we'd continue to see some reasonable growth in corn use for ethanol next year. So overall, you would have to say we have a market for 200 to 300 million bushels more corn next year than what we'll use this year.
And you're simply swapping out gallons of ethanol, which essentially are the same but come from a different stock. Sugarcane, in the case of the advanced biofuel coming out of Brazil, and corn-based ethanol going back to Brazil to fill in that void.
Yeah, as illogical as that sounds, that's what we're talking about. But the other part of that, Todd, is Brazil would want our ethanol if their domestic supplies remain tight, if they get back into a more abundant sugar supply, lower sugar prices, so that they can expand their own domestic ethanol production. They would be able to export ethanol and really not need us to replace that with corn-based ethanol out of the U.S. So that's part of the dynamic of how that's all going to unfold over the next year or two.
Where does the advanced fuel go? I mean, relatively speaking, if we plateau out at 10, if we're at 10% as opposed to 15, and we've actually hit the blend wall, we can't put any more into the fuel supply. What do you do with the extra ethanol that comes in as advanced? How does it get used?
That's a good question, Todd. I mean, the advanced biofuel category consists of a number of products potentially, and one of those, I mean, the advanced biofuels can be met by biodiesel, and it gets a credit of 1.5 per gallon towards that mandate. So part of it, we're looking at a 2 billion gallon mandate for advanced biofuels this year. A billion of that could come from biodiesel. It gets a credit of 1.5 per gallon, so 1.5 billion of that could be met from biodiesel. That still leaves 500 million that would have to come from Brazilian ethanol or some other cellulosic product or something. So I think for 1 year we can probably make everything fit and get it done. The problem is, as you go into 2013 and beyond, that advanced biofuel mandate increases and increases sharply by 2022. And the real question is, what do you do with that? I mean, gasoline consumption right now is declining fairly dramatically. So I think we're running into some of the difficulties that come from the politics, from the mandates and economics, and we're just going to be at a decision point sometime here in the fairly near future of what becomes of those mandates.
Yeah, so the it'll be a legislative decision, and the easiest portion may be to allow corn-based or ethanol to be an advanced biofuel.
I mean, I think that's one alternative, but your point is, if there's no place to put it,
right? Why produce it?
Then why produce it? And that's where the mandates will have to come into question, I think, is,
right.
Yeah, we can produce it, but there's no room to consume it. So now
yeah.
What?
I guess I was thinking that if you were looking for an alternative fuel source, not that ethanol, corn-based ethanol, needed to be the advanced biofuel, yeah. But if you wanted an alternative fuel source to supplement the entirety of what was consumed, that allowing corn-based ethanol to fill that gap would make things easier.
Right. And I mean, the other piece is that corn-based ethanol has no ceiling on it. I mean, there is a minimum. But if there's a place to put it and it makes economic sense and there's no limit to how much corn-based ethanol we can produce and put into the fuel supply, the problem right now is without a higher blend level, there's just no place to go with it.
Right,
but
so.
If the blend is uniformly increased to 15% and we get the infrastructure in place, we still have the issue of where does the advance come from? But in terms of total ethanol supply, we can produce as much as the market wants.
Makes for another interesting year.
It does.
Maybe an interesting decade. It's
yeah.
been a good start to it so far.
No question, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Daryl.
Okay, thank you.
Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois.